Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. And this will be, I can guarantee, or your money back, an interesting conversation about cancer in dogs and the relationship between that and cancer in people. It's a conversation you might not have heard before. And on the telephone is Dr. Timothy Fan, veterinary oncologist, professor of veterinary oncology at the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine. Dr. Fan, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, I think where we begin is, I mean, we all know that dogs get cancers. We all have known people, or perhaps our own dogs, that have had cancer. We have all known people that have had cancer, unfortunately. What is comparative oncology?
Yeah, I think comparative oncology is just simply looking at similarities and differences between two different species. In my field, it's really looking at pet dogs and pet cats compared to the other species, which is human beings. And so we seek as veterinarians and scientists to learn what are the shared and what are the differences in tumor biology, how do tumors respond to therapy, how cancers can spread between pet dogs and cats versus human beings.
And for those who may be saying, but they're dogs. Well, we share the same environment. They are mammals. And actually, when you look at their brains anyway, much closer related to us than some might think. Am I correct about that?
You're absolutely correct. And I think that when we think about cancer, we all understand that cancer is a genetic disease, right? So there are genes that go bad, or there are changes in the expression of genes. So cancer is very much driven by genetics, but it also is very much influenced by our environment. And what we can...
No, go ahead.
What we can say is that the genetic material of dogs or cats is about 95% conserved with people, and it is even more conserved with the actual tumors that they share across these species.
Right, which are many of the same cancers that we get with, in a sense anyway, many of the same signs as we get as well. And the prognosis is often similar too, correct?
Yeah, I think that definitely there are certain tumor types that are very clearly shared between dogs and people. The most common tumor types that we think about are brain cancers, breast cancer, bone cancer such as osteosarcoma, lymphoma, bladder cancer, and melanoma. Those are the six really highlighted tumor types that the National Cancer Institute recognizes as valuable to study what we see in dogs and cats, and how can that be applied to help people with those same type of cancers.
Now, for many years, the way in which dogs age has been studied, because they age so similar to the way human beings age. And we've learned a lot about how human beings age, and we've helped dogs in the process by studying them as well. These are not laboratory animals we're talking about. These are dogs that live in homes that, you mentioned, share the same environment, but literally sleep in our beds these days very often. Half of all dogs statistically do that. Most dogs are kept in the home. And dogs are outside with us. And whatever is outside, out there, that might or might not impact cancers, the dogs are receiving as well. So is it helpful also, realistically, that dogs don't live nearly as long? So we can go through studying many generations of dogs, which has been done with aging dogs, at the same time that we are working on that. We're more slowly aging, but we can better get a sense of what's going on. You know what I'm trying to ask here? In a very clumsy way, which I apologize for.
No, I totally understand. So I think that there are great advantages if we choose to study cancer in dogs and cats. And so one advantage is that, as you said, these are not laboratory dogs. These are pet dogs, pet cats that spontaneously develop cancer, right? So in that sense, these are natural tumors, naturally occurring tumors that people get, right? And so there's nothing artificial or induced creation of these tumors. These are naturally occurring tumors in dogs and cats. And I think that the biology of these tumors are similar, but I think the progression or how fast these tumors grow or spread tend to be accelerated in dogs and cats. And that does provide an opportunity to evaluate new therapies that you'll know if that treatment is working in a dog or cat with cancer because their lifespan tends to be shorter and their disease or cancer tends to be more rapidly progressive. So you'll be able to know if a novel therapy works in a dog or cat over a course of 6 months, 9 months, versus if you were to take a similar cancer in a human being, then it may take 5 years for you to know if that type of therapy works. And that's really kind of one of the beneficial angles that we as veterinary oncologists talk about is if we're studying a similar cancer in dogs as people, we'll probably get answers faster if we were to include pet dogs or pet cats into that drug development pathway.
What do you know, Dr. Phan? You said it far more articulately than I tried to, and thank you for that. And no wonder, you're a movie star. So, Shelter Me, The Cancer Pioneers. That's the name of a movie that you can see any number of ways online, including through public television. Just go to their site, type in Shelter Me, The Cancer Pioneers. And in that movie, Dr. Phan, you spoke about the work you're specifically doing, and I want to talk about that when we come back with Dr. Timothy Phan from the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine on WGN. Dr. Timothy Phan is a veterinary oncologist, professor of veterinary oncology at the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine, and there's a movie about what we're talking about available on public television, online, and probably seen wherever you happen to live periodically because that's what happens. They rerun these things. It's available elsewhere if you Google it as well. Shelter Me, The Cancer Pioneers. And Dr. Phan, you are a pioneer of sorts in comparative oncology. What specifically are you working on to help dogs that one would believe may help or is help, really right now, helping human beings as well?
Thank you, Steve, for having me on this show. So I think in the Shelter Me, Cancer Pioneers, it really focuses on the hope of immunotherapy, right? And so when we think about fighting cancer, we know about surgery, we know about chemotherapy, we know about radiation therapy. But the new frontier is really how do we train our immune system to recognize cancer and eradicate that cancer from your body for the rest of your life. And immunotherapy on the human side has been really active for at least three decades. And in 2013, it was heralded as the next scientific breakthrough. And so I think that immunotherapy continues to be hugely promising. And in this documentary, we talk about some specific immunotherapeutic platforms or technologies that we have shown are safe and effective in treating dogs with naturally occurring cancers. And these same technologies have been used and are currently being used to treat people with similar tumors with good success as well. So it's a great full circle story that really talks and provides the perspective of pet owners, pets with cancer, and the veterinarians that are helping them. And on the same side, they talk about the basic scientists, the human physicians, and the cancer patients that are benefiting from these same technologies.
Now, without getting too crazy technical here, explain your work with cytokines, beginning with telling us what they are.
Sure. So cytokines are natural proteins that are produced in our body. They are produced by your immune cells that are used to fight against infection. And so if you were to get a virus, you develop a fever. And that fever is an elevation in your body temperature driven by these cytokines. And so the purpose of cytokines are to awaken your immune system, amplify your immune system to fight against something. And what we do know is that you can harness these cytokines to actually identify and help kill cancer. And specifically what we are exploring, very, very excited about, is to deliver these cytokines and keep them within the tumor, because we can we don't want too much cytokines to be in your bloodstream, because that could lead to fever and chills and side effects that are undesirable and sometimes life-threatening. And so there have been new technologies that have come out to keep these cytokines at the site of injection. And what we talk about is intratumoral cytokines. This is a type of new therapy that has proven very, very effective in our dog studies that we've evaluated and very, very nicely translated to treating people with the exact same intratumoral cytokine in the people studies in that documentary as well.
What kind of cancers are we talking about for this?
So for the dog studies that we've done, we have traditionally targeted melanoma. That's a very common tumor that we see, often involving the oral cavity, the mouth cavity of a dog. On the human side, they have also targeted melanoma, but their phase one human clinical trial that has been completed included additional different types of tumors like squamous cell carcinoma and whatnot. So for our studies in dogs, it's been focused on melanoma. However, we're in the process of extending that intratumoral cytokine strategy to address more common tumors that we see, including bone cancer in dogs, including another type of tumor known as soft tissue sarcomas. And we're very, very excited about continuing to expand this technology to maybe treat mast cell tumors or mammary gland tumors as well.
Now, we're in Chicago, so if people do listen to WGN all over the world, quite literally, because people listen online, but we're based in Chicago. So if you're in Chicago or in the general Chicago area and your dog has been diagnosed with a cancer, should they contact you, or not necessarily you personally, but the Cancer Center at the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine, which is in Champaign-Urbana, and then get an answer as to whether their dog may be a candidate?
Yeah, I think that certainly there are different ways to have people educated on what is available. Again, in this documentary, I like to use little acronyms, and I say the documentary is embodied by bringing on the heat, right? H-E-A-T, right? And so H is really, this documentary provides great hope, right? It inspires people to think that there's a hope to fight cancer. The E is education. We want to educate pet owners. We want to educate veterinarians. We want to educate everyone that there are treatment options available. A is awareness. We need to increase public awareness that pets with cancer can be helped. And T is actually translation. We are not only discovering novel ways of therapy, but we're translating that to help pets with cancer. And very, very importantly, those same technologies are used to treat and help people with cancer. So I think the way to get the word out is certainly work with your local veterinarian. Your veterinarian can provide additional information on that tumor, and certainly there are websites that provide different universities, including University of Illinois, that we have like 17 clinical trials right now for all different types of cancer, and certainly we are wanting to actually continue to help pets, dogs, and cats with cancer through these clinical trials. They're heavily funded, so there's not very much out-of-pocket cost to pet owners, and it allows us to actually bring forward cutting-edge technologies that would not otherwise be available through traditional methods.
And how do they contact the Cancer Center there? or is that only a referral through their veterinarian?
I think that the most efficient way is to work with their veterinarian that then works with us. But we certainly do have the ability just to call in through the veterinary teaching hospital, and people can leave messages on different services, phones, and then we would then go through those messages and make callbacks.
You know, at one point in the movie Shelter Me, The Cancer Pioneers, the patient, the human patient, the client, looks at you and says, Dr. Phan, you gave me the gift of watching my dog grow old. And yes, that, you know, at that point, tears started on my end, you know, because really we think of cancer very much as a death sentence for dogs and cats. I mean, this film focuses on dogs, but cats and other pets get cancers as well. And it isn't necessarily so anymore. And we're learning so much. One part that we just don't have time to go into now is the relationship of osteosarcoma, which is something dogs, particularly larger dogs, do get. Although it's rare in children, it is occurring and has occurred for many years in children without ability to do much about it. There hasn't been much change in treatment. And what we're learning from dogs actually may and is beginning to save children's lives. Dr. Phan, thank you so much for the work you do. I am so sorry we're out of time. Again, the movie Shelter Me, The Cancer Pioneers. Dr. Timothy Phan, thank you so much. Well, there are many books out about puppies and some books out about senior dogs. This book is about both, and we'll talk with the authors next week. It's called Old Dog, New Dog, Supporting Your Aging Best Friend and Also Welcoming a New One. Kathy Callahan and Helen St. Pierre will be here. And the book also touches on what do you do when you bring a puppy into the home with an older dog? First of all, is it a good idea? And under what circumstances? And if it is a good idea, or even if not, and you do it anyway, then what can you do to make the transition smoother for the puppy and also for the older dog to deal with a crazy puppy, which isn't always easy to do? What is easy to do is to listen next week right here on WGN. Dr. Joe Washlog is the chief veterinary officer at Elevet and also professor of clinical nutrition at Cornell University College of Veterinary Medicine. And the two actually kind of go together in some ways, which I hope, Dr. Washlog, we have time to talk about. I want to begin here. Elevet is a manufacturer and supplier of CBD products for pets. I want to talk about first what CBD is, just to be clear. Can you explain?
Yeah, sure thing, Steve. You know, CBD is basically the term cannabidiol. It's basically what's made from cannabis sativa that's in the form of hemp rather than in the form of marijuana. So it's federally legal, and basically we extract a whole plant extract that's rich in not only CBD but also CBDA, which is absorbed a little bit better.
And CBD, as opposed to marijuana, is not only not dangerous to pets, but can be helpful. But here's where it gets confusing. The space you're in, or CBD is in, is not regulated by the government. So all products are not the same. That's a one giant question all in one there, Doctor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, right now it's considered a quote-unquote supplement or a nutraceutical. Therefore, it's not a pharmaceutical, which would be regulated by the FDA. So all products out there basically can have just about anything they want in them and can have, you know, CBD to meet the product claim or to meet the actual level that's on the actual product. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. It's just kind of the Wild West. That's part of the problem.
Yeah. Where your product is available through veterinarians and also you yourself and your colleagues have been responsible, which we'll talk about the research in a moment, to better understand what CBD can do to help our animals. And in a way, I would suggest, first of all, let me go back to what I said before that we didn't answer to make clear. This is not marijuana, and this is not anything that is going to make your pet high. And in fact, the products with marijuana for humans, they can be very dangerous to pets. So people get those brownies with you know what inside. They put the brownies out on the counter not thinking this is a drug. This is something I'll put. Now they're getting a double whammy. They're getting chocolate and they're getting THC, which is very different than CBD. And there have that's a real concern, I believe.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, when marijuana is, consumed, definitely that THC effect is, you know, psychotropic. Your dog pees on itself. You know, basically it's pretty stumbly and things like that. CBD just doesn't cause that to happen because it just doesn't hit the right receptors, right? So, you know, in the end, these hemp products have been shown now over the past few years to be extremely safe. Multiple studies now in dogs and cats showing, you know, chronic consumption is very, very safe. So we don't worry too much about that. It's really about whether we can prove it's effective for various issues like mobility and, you know, seizure disorders, et cetera. And that evidence is coming along quite nicely.
And CBD is naturally occurring in people and dogs and cats and mammals in general, correct?
Yeah, I mean, we have the appropriate receptors from basically, if you have a nervous system in your body, you can respond to CBD and some of the cannabinoids.
Okay, so what do we know? I want to begin with seizures because I believe that might have been the first discovery that was made that for some dogs with some type of seizures, some types of seizures, CBD actually can make a difference. And this is huge to know about for people because some of the pharmaceuticals for seizures actually have significant side effects. Some of them work better than others. Some of them are very expensive. So this as an alternative for the right dog with the right seizures can be an important option, correct?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at this point, there are three studies. One was done by our company and two others were done out at Colorado State with Dr. Steph McGrath looking at CBD as an add-on to the others, showing that it could definitely reduce seizure activity in some dogs, not all. Those are the tough cases. So we're kind of fortunate to be doing a sort of a head-to-head against one of the major pharmaceutical drugs now, Phenobarb. To show if it's as effective as what we'll say is the gold standard for initial treatment. So we'll know more in a couple of years, but it's already been shown to be effective as an add-on for sure.
And that's huge because less phenobarbital, that's important because phenobarbital is not without its side effects. What's more, as I recall, and I might be wrong, that dogs sometimes build up a resistance to the phenobarbital. So the dose has to titrate higher and higher and higher for some dogs over a period of time. So this would prevent that from happening?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's the sort of the holy grail to get something that's less toxic and you don't have to measure in the bloodstream because it can be such a toxin to the liver. So that's why when your dog is on phenobarb, you have to go back to get serum concentrations drawn all the time and seeing if you're too high or too low. The safety of CBD is just far greater, so you know you don't have to worry about those kinds of issues.
Yeah, I might be wrong here, and if I am, please correct me. This will not be the first time. I would say that CBD is a drug. It's not a pharmaceutical. I know that, but it is a drug, and it's a naturally occurring one. Is there any truth to that crazy notion?
Well, I mean, that's sort of the crux of it, right, is that, you know, it has been isolated and it's actually been made into a drug. So, I mean, there is a drug called Epidiolex. It's for children with childhood seizure disorders. That's been isolated from the actual hemp plant. There's nothing else in it. What we're doing is actually just saying, well, here, let's give you all the cannabinoids from the hemp plant. And, of course, the majority of it is CBD and CBDA. And it seems to have the same effect as the quote-unquote pharmaceutical type of product, without, we'll just say, the extra cost and really the need to have, you know, veterinary intervention, but you should always definitely talk to your vet about doing these things.
What about arthritis? Osteoarthritis, as it turns out, is more common than we ever thought in cats, and the same to a degree in dogs. And as our dogs live longer and longer, and frankly are more and more overweight, and the same with cats, arthritis is an issue. And also the drugs for osteoarthritis can also have a variety of side effects, particularly since we're often talking about older animals that may not be able to take those drugs.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, part of the issue is that we see a, you know, certain amount or number of dogs that have, we'll say, intolerance to the typical treatment, which is non-steroidals. And, you know, there's now five studies out looking at it in dogs and one in cats showing that it can be as effective, particularly if your dog is having issues with those non-steroidals. It's definitely an option, and it can be used with it because they work very very differently in the body to help mitigate the pain response.
So you're following two different pathways then. So you can actually use a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, but maybe less of a dose, Dr. Washlaw?
Potentially. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And saving you cost, which I'm all about, saving people cost if I can. Now, when we that's a good thing. When we come back on WGN, I want to talk about more potential uses of CBD for our pets, including older pets who say, I don't know if I feel like eating a lot. You happen to be a nutritionist. It's the perfect match. And we'll talk about that. Yes, when we come back with Dr. Joe Washlaw on WGN. Dr. Joe Washlaw is as smart as they get. I'm honored to have you on the radio. Chief Veterinary Medical Officer at Elevet, Professor of Clinical Nutrition at Cornell University College of Veterinary Medicine. And the titles actually go on, but we would be here for quite some time talking about that, so I won't. So what I mentioned is that older pets, we were talking about arthritis, and while osteoarthritis or arthritis in pets can and does occur in middle-aged animals and even younger, it's most common in older animals. Those older animals sometimes have a nutritional issue of one kind or another, and the geriatric animals sometimes just say, you know, I don't feel like eating anymore. Now, I've heard, I don't know this firsthand, of course, I've heard that CBD in humans actually can encourage appetite. Is the same true for our pets?
Yeah, I think there is definitely some application here in terms of, you know, just making dogs feel better globally. And that's where the geriatric pet's kind of this mixed bag, right? You know, we have arthritis, we have some cognitive decline, we tend to see that they're getting almost depressed, and CBD kind of picks them up and makes them feel just better, and very often eating kind of goes along with that.
Now, the question I get asked most often as a certified animal behavior consultant, especially at this time of year, fireworks around the corner. So you know what I'm about to ask right now, CBD and anxiety, whether it be anxiety for loud noises like fireworks, car travel, separation anxiety, the list potentially goes on and on. Does CBD help?
Yeah, I think it has, definitely has a place there. And I think when we talk about what the dose is to really get, we'll say, a good anti-anxiety effect, we're still kind of playing around and trying to understand that better. And it's often a little bit higher than what we would see with, you know, the typical mobility issues or the seizure issues. Often we have to kind of double or triple the dose.
That's interesting. So if you have a dog that is on CBD already for something and 4th of July is around the corner, can I say, or should one check with their veterinarian first to double the dose?
Yeah, I think it's safe, a you know, single administration to double or triple a dose. And we're in the middle of a study at the University of Tennessee really to look at what dose seems to be appropriate for noise phobia. But in general, that's part of the issue is people pick up whatever at the grocery store, and they're usually not dosing what they really need to be dosing for anxiety, which is, I guess, part of the issue. Some people say it works. Some people say it doesn't. It really comes down to understanding that dose. And we talk about 2 milligrams per kg for a lot of issues. However, maybe 4 mgs or 6 mgs is probably a better dose.
People have no idea what that means, what you just said.
Yes.
So yeah, how do we say that? How do we say that in English?
Well, it's like whatever that label and whatever your veterinarian's told you to use as the quote-unquote dose, you can definitely double that, particularly in those times of situational anxiety. And we think you get about 4 to 6 hours probably of just a better response from separation to car ride to groomer, you know, issues as well as noise phobia.
Now, the name of the company is called Elevet, E-L-L-E-V-E-T. And I'm making a point of saying that, Dr. Washlog, not necessarily only to make you happy, but to say that this product, which it probably does, but this product is available through veterinarians. You can get it elsewhere, I believe, but primarily through veterinary professionals, and has been tested and researched. The concern, because you mentioned yourself, it's the Wild West out there. And you can go to any pharmacy, any grocery store, any convenience store, and pick up a product that's labeled CBD for pets, or even not for pets, and people buy it and give it to their pet. And I know studies have been done to demonstrate arsenic has been in it or whatever it is. I mean, these products are often from China or elsewhere, and they are not specifically for pets, and because they're not government controlled, there's even some question about what's in those products. I want to make a very strong point of that, to use your veterinarian, for whether it's Elevet or something else, for a recommendation, but it usually will be Elevet, for a product through a veterinary professional. Also, that veterinary professional also knows what other drugs your pet is or isn't on, and say, okay, we may be able to play with the dose or not, all those other things, Dr. Washlug.
Yeah. No, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there, Steve. It really is about finding something that your veterinarian is comfortable with, because they'll know what products tend to have great safety records. They'll tend to know what products have been recalled and things of that nature, and things that are consistent. That's half the key, is it's a consistent product every time you buy it, which can't be said for a lot of the products out there.
So for Elevet, is there a downside with 4th of July coming? And you know, because you've been through other 4ths of July, that your dog has issues, or maybe the issue is separation anxiety, which is likely now the most common behavior problem in dogs. And even aggressive, I'm putting air quotes there that you can't see, aggressive dogs, fear, which is anxiety-based, is the most common explanation for that. So many of the behavior issues go back to anxiety of some sort. Do you suggest that there's no downside to trying Elevet?
Yeah, I think that's the nice part of using a CBD product like Elevet, is the fact that we have a specific product that's actually meant for this at a slightly higher dose for these situational uses. And the reality is we see that we need that slightly higher dose, and we know that we're seeing behavioral benefits. In a lot of cases, it's actually the reason that it's one of our best sellers, is because most owners are like, listen, I got to get through this car ride, I got to get through this thunderstorm and whatever. And I think they're seeing that response, and they're like, well, I don't have to go to the vet to get it, because a lot of the things that the veterinarian gives you, if you double or triple the dose, it'll knock your dog out, and they'll be, walking around groggy and not really functioning very well. CBD just doesn't tend to have that same kind of effect. It doesn't make them completely sedated like some of the other things.
All right. So you answered that next question before I asked it. So I will ask this question with less than a minute left, and I apologize for saving this at the very end. But I know, not as many studies have been done about cats. What can you say in a minute about cats and CBD?
Yeah, I'm going to just say we just finished a study looking at osteoarthritis, and they're seeing the same benefits in cats if we give a very similar dose. And I think what's even more interesting is that we're seeing a lot of reports of behavioral things, and I think cats have even more behavioral issues than dogs. Just in terms of inner cat aggression at
sure.
the house, periuria, peeing outside the box, yowling and carrying on at night, know, they have their own set of what we'll call behavioral abnormalities, and I think that's where we're actually starting to see some really interesting things happen and are getting us, you know, going towards more studies on the behavior of cats in the near future.
For cats and dogs, can it help with dementia, cognitive decline?
I that's the number one reason as a GP. You know, when I was doing that about a year or so ago, when I was doing sort of relief work, people come in and say, my dog is just not himself, pacing at night, getting up and, you know, staring at the corner or barking incessantly. And a lot of those dogs also had mobility issues. And I'm like, well, what better than the CBD product? It's a two for one.
Yeah.
Help your mobility issue, and I can probably help your sundowner's issue as well.
Dr. Joe Washlug, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much. It's not that our pets aren't patriotic, but here it comes, this loud, thunderous sound. And remember, their sense of hearing is generally far more sensitive than ours. And no one explains, this is a celebration. So, of course, they do what comes naturally. They panic. And sometimes it is literally a panic attack. So the thing is, you know how your dog has responded previously on 4th of July's, right? And if your dog truly is in a panic state, inconsolable, then right now, run to your veterinarian because there are options available. And people say, I don't want to drug my dog. I understand that. But what is better? Having a panic attack and literally perhaps feeling like I'm going to die, or toning that down, even if it makes your dog just a bit sleepy? I suggest the latter. We'll talk to you next week, bright and early, on WGN.